Ready. Awesome. Yeah, I've been so excited to share what happened in India with y'all. Just want to start off by saying how thankful I am to be a part of a church that so willingly supports missions. Like, you're supporting the move of God in the nations, and he's doing something. Like, I've seen it firsthand, and I'm so excited to share with you what I saw. And what's awesome is, like, you sponsored me, you've been praying for me, so all these stories I'm going to share, they're not just my stories, but they're yours too. It's a team win. So, yeah, I'm excited to share. But yeah, I went to the city of Bangalore, and India is the second most populated country in the whole world. So Bangalore is one of their more populated cities, so you can imagine how crowded it was. Yeah, the traffic was always crazy. So many people on the streets. So yeah, there's a huge need for the gospel there. The people in India, they're very open and welcoming and accepting of other religions, other gods, but the government, they don't allow missionaries to come into the country. So when we would go through the airport, we had to tell them we were just touring, just sightseeing. And we had to speak in code, and if we were walking as a group, there's pretty much 17 white people in the group going to India. It's kind of obvious, so we had to break off into groups of one and two as we went to the airport and kind of pretend like we didn't know each other. It was kind of cool, actually. It kind of felt like we were secret agents or something. It was pretty cool, but yeah, that's how kind of intense it was going into India. But once we were there, it was amazing. So yeah, show you some pictures. You can see, I'll kind of get out of the way, but one of the college pastors we had on our team, he's a great photographer, but he took some really awesome pictures. This is the city of Bangalore. I think this is actually from the roof of our hotel, so we were right in the middle of the city. Yeah, and this is a picture we took on the streets. I think we were driving to a worship night, but you can see how narrow the streets are. I don't know if you can really see with the lighting, but there's tiny little yellow vehicles right there. Those are rickshaws. And they're actually automated. They have, well, not automated, but they have engines. So they're driven kind of like an ATV or something. They have three wheels. But that was their main form of transportation. The traffic was crazy. The streets were really narrow. They were weaving in and out. There wasn't any, like, method to their madness. They're just trying to get to the point A, get to point B as fast as they can. You can see how narrow this street is. This is actually one of the cleaner streets, but you can see the trash on the ground right there. And this building right here is the Parliament building for Bangalore, I believe. But yeah, I'll just to introduce you to India, I'll just talk about their culture a little bit. Indian culture is, I wouldn't say it's the complete opposite of American culture, but it's so different, so different. They are known for their hospitality. The people there, they're very, very warm, welcoming, generous. They'll just walk up to you and invite you into their homes, ask you where you're from, and they're not afraid to talk to you at all. It's not awkward with them. You can talk about anything. It was kind of mind-blowing, honestly. And they're not afraid of strangers, so they'll walk up to you and ask you what country you're from, and they'll invite you into their home to eat a meal, and they just met you. So it's really cool. I spent more of my time on the busy streets where there weren't homes or in parks, but several people on my team were invited into homes. I was invited into one home, but yeah, it was an experience. The streets are so crowded and smelly. There's lots of pollution in the air, but just like how welcoming and kind the people are, just made you love being there. It made you love Indian people. So it was really easy to fall in love with the people and just to see how much God wanted a relationship with them, and just to love them, you know. Yeah, it's so different from America, because here a lot of times they can feel kind of mundane, and people don't want to speak with you or get in your personal business. They're kind of more reserved, and it's not like that at all in India, especially Bangalore. So that was so different. It was so much easier to get in gospel conversations. But yeah, the food is amazing. I'm not a big fan of spicy food, or I wasn't before India, but I went there, and that just completely changed my palate. Their food is so, so spicy and rich. Their desserts are so, so sweet. But, yeah, most people would eat with their right hand. The reason why you only eat with your right hand is because of sanitation. They don't have toilet paper in most places. So you can kind of imagine why some people only eat with their right hand. It's like culturally insensitive to offer somebody your left hand. They'll say, no, don't touch me. So, yeah. You only eat with your right hand. Of course, we would bring toilet paper with us to places, but yeah, that's good. It's part of the culture to only use your right hand when you eat or when you shake hands or whatever. English was very, very widely spoken. It is a developing country, but with the, like, I think Bangalore is actually the technology capital of India. They have a lot of like IT jobs going there. That's like, if you were to call like Verizon and ask for customer service, you'd probably get somebody in Bangalore answering your phone talking to you. You'd probably talk to Indians in Bangalore before. But there's so many people working IT in Bangalore, and because of that's been growing so much and spreading in India, English has been the primary language used for education and in their businesses. You know, they're learning how to speak English, and most people spoke like 5 and 6 languages. I was so impressed with how many languages they spoke, but I did run into quite a few language barriers. I had to most of the people that did speak English, I had to use an Indian accent for them to understand me. So I'd be like, yes, yes, very good, and talk like that the whole time, you know? And that head bobble I just did, they don't nod their heads or like give you like gestures. Their head bobble is like their universal gesture. So like if they were to say thank you, they do this. If they say bye, okay. They're always doing this head bobble. And I had just like extreme culture shock when I came back to America, because I would go to restaurants and I would say thank you as I'm receiving my food, and I'd just go thank you, and they'd be like, "What are you doing?" I did that so much, and then I would just like laugh at myself as I walked and sat down. But yeah, yeah, there were a few people we did encounter who didn't speak English. But what's really cool is even those people who did speak English, a lot of times they would recognize the name Jesus, and you could at least ask to pray for him. You could somehow show them that, hey, I just want to pray for you. If you can't get the gospel across, at least you're trying to love them. And if you make love your mission, then that message gets across, even though they can't understand English. But, yeah, just like the currency over there is the rupee. You kind of see that little picture of all the different bills. I think Gandhi's on every single one of them. But, yeah, the one U.S. dollar is approximately 64 rupees. And the exchange rate over there is crazy. So if you were to, like, go into India with only $20 to your name, you could probably survive 2 weeks. Yeah, 64 rupees. I think a meal at KFC, they love KFC over there. The KFC is probably better in India than the U.S. But $2, I think $2 could buy you almost anything on the menu at KFC. And it's about 120 rupees was your average meal price. But, yeah, the money over there went a long way. And cricket. Cricket is not seen in America, but pretty much everywhere else in the world, especially India. Cricket is huge in India. I actually bought a couple of cricket jerseys. But yeah, the Bangalore team right there is the Royal Challengers. And that was a really easy way to talk to some of the younger guys, was to ask them about cricket, if they watch cricket, who their favorite team was. Kinda. It's really complicated, but it's like a cross between baseball and soccer or something. But yeah, we actually played some cricket with some kids in parks. It was really fun that they kind of taught us. But show you a picture of the clothing over there. It's me and my girlfriend Jasmine. Kind of used that as an excuse to show off Jasmine. But but yeah, she's wearing the Indian dress. It's called the kurta. And I'm kind of wearing what a normal Indian man would wear. Dress is really modest. The men would only wear pants. That like I saw maybe one guy wearing shorts, and I think he was getting some odd looks. But yeah, you'd wear collared shirts and pants all the time. Not wear any graphic T-shirts. That it just wasn't culturally their thing. And they're really modest. You didn't see any bare skin at all, really. When you did, they were kind of getting singled out. Yeah, women wore really long, flowy dresses and skirts, And it was really cool. I kind of like the clothing better in India than I do in America, especially what you see when you go like to the mall or something. But our main form of transportation I was telling you about was the rickshaw. And there's a better picture of a rickshaw. Yeah, we saw so many rickshaws that really there's only room for three people in the back seat and then room for one in the front, which is the driver. But we saw four, five, six people in the back and some people sitting in the front with the driver, and they're so packed. That was our main form of transportation. There were cars and like Ubers and stuff like that too, but we stuck to rickshaws. It was probably the cheapest, but you can kind of see a picture like that. That's actually traffic when it's more tame. You could barely move in traffic, and I remember we'd be stuck in traffic for hours, but India traffic is the definition of close calls. We didn't see a single wreck, but if traffic in America were to be like that, there'd be wrecks all the time. But there were so many close calls, but our nerves were shot after day one, and we just kind of got used to it. But yeah, our motto going into it, we were being trained by the long-term team that were there. They were used to the culture, so they were kind of getting us kind of debriefed. They told us, like, your motto for transportation is to forgive the rickshaw driver. They would try all kinds of crazy stunts when they're driving, and they would always try to overcharge when you're trying to pay. They have a meter, which is kind of like a fixed rate. It'll start off at 25 rupees, and then if you go a certain distance or a certain amount of time, they'll start adding rupees. But you always want to ask for a meter, but they'll always try to overcharge you. They'll start off at like 100 rupees, or you'll say, no, meter's fair. And yeah, and we tried to bargain. We turned, I don't know how many rickshaw drivers we turned down, but it was really hard to bargain sometimes. If we were in a hurry, we would just have to agree to a really expensive price. But yeah, and then at night, the rate would go up, but it was kind of universal. The later into the night, or if it was raining, it would get more expensive. But I probably rode in more rickshaws in my life than I have cars at this point. We rode in so many rickshaws. But there's kind of a backseat view of a rickshaw, what you'd see. And that little box right there, that's a meter. But yeah, getting into like spiritual climate and like religious culture. Yeah, the climate over there is very spiritually active. Here it's kind of dry. You don't really see a lot of like signs and wonders and miracles and stuff like that. But that's like that'll happen. All that we saw like pretty much the Book of Acts lived out in India. It was amazing. Their faith, they will expect to see something happen. If you're telling them that, oh, I serve a God who heals, they'll be like, okay, show me. And they'll be like waiting for it to happen, and they believe in it. Yeah, they're very spiritual people. They believe in all kinds of supernatural things. They're very accepting of it. And yeah, but there's so many different religions there. You'd think Hinduism is the most dominant religion over there. 81% of the population is Hindu. 13% Muslim, but there are so many other random different religions and variations of Hinduism, and I would say no two people probably believe the same thing. I think in Hinduism there's like 3 billion gods and counting or something like that, and if you're not careful and you're trying to share with Jesus to someone, they'll just add Jesus to their list of billions of gods. So you have to tell them like Jesus is the only God, he's the only truth, the only way, the only life. And there were quite a few Muslims we ran into, but Muslims in India are so different because they're affected by the Indian culture, where they're very accepting and welcoming and kind. So they're not aggressive at all. They'll talk to you about what you believe and have conversations with you about that all day. And if someone's a Muslim, they know of Jesus, so it's easy to get into a conversation of, well, what do you know about Jesus? Tell me what you know, and then see where that goes. But they recognize him as a great prophet, but not as the Son of God. So it's fun to get in these conversations with Muslims. And several of them, I'd say we'd get in conversations with rickshaw drivers, and several of them would tell us that they're Muslim, and they believe that all gods are one, like Allah, Jesus, they're all one. And we're like, no. And you kind of have to correct them, but only 2% of all of India, not just Bangalore, but all of India's population is professing Christian. But we actually did run into quite a few Christians, so it was pretty cool. But yeah, I went with a church. I think Bob and Brent went with me once.
Yeah.
To Antioch in Raleigh or Cary, and that's the church I've been attending since I've been going to Campbell. And they're a very missional church, just like we are. But they're always sending teams to the nations somewhere where they feel that there's a need. They're a very, very missional church, and that was the group I went with. Pretty much 17 college age like me went together from Antioch, Raleigh, to India. And kind of their motto is to love God, love people, make disciples. So the two greatest commandments and the Great Commission. So they're really about making disciples. That's their focus is discipling people to share the gospel, and then they would go make disciples, and they would go make disciples. And that's what's changing the world is discipleship. But just to kind of give you a picture, I said earlier, one in six people in the world is Indian. I think over almost 1.5 billion people live in India. That's how crowded it is. And I think their landmass is smaller than America. I think America only has about 330 million people living here. So you can imagine, like, it's almost quadruple or five times the size in population. But yeah, unreached people groups. Yeah, like it says there, I have the verse from Matthew 24, the gospel that Jesus says, that the gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. I have bolded all nations. So Jesus is saying, when all nations know of me, all nations are represented by someone who follows me, then I will come back. So we can actually hasten the day of Jesus' return. We don't know when that is, but there's still so many, even in our modern technology age, still so many people who don't know about Jesus and haven't heard the gospel. So many unreached people groups, so many nations who have never heard of Jesus and don't know about him. And 2,000 of those unreached people groups are in India. So it's such a crucial place to be sharing the gospel. And because the need there is so great, that's why we went. And we prayed that we would run into unreached people groups. And that's something that we could definitely be prayed into, is that they would be reached. We can hasten the day of Jesus' return. That's kind of a crazy thought. But yeah, there were kind of just a demographic of what the missions looked like. There were short-term teams. They would go for 2 weeks. I was on one of those. They call those impact teams. And they'd be the people doing kind of the more hardcore evangelism and discipleship, kind of fast-paced. And then there was the long-term team. They'd be there anywhere from 3 months to a year or longer. There's some people who are living there. And we would find people who are open, also known as people of peace, who are open in three different ways, and I'll get to that later. And we would kind of pass them off to the long-term team where they could kind of continue the work we were doing with them, so that they would have community and continue to be discipled. We'd follow up with them and just disciple them in how to spend time with Jesus, how to get in the Word and pray and worship and how important it was to be in community and the importance of sharing the gospel. So we would disciple them in that. We had like a page with scriptures, and we'd kind of walk them through it and ask them questions. It was really good. Then we'd pass off these people. We'd go meet them with one of the interns from the long-term team, and we would pass them off to the long-term team where they could continue to disciple them. So it was what Antioch's doing in India, all over the world, is really, really good. It's really fruitful, and people are getting, their lives are getting transformed. So here's a picture of my team. I love these guys so much. There's 17 of us. The two people that aren't pictured are our college pastors, but every person on this team is so sold out for Jesus and so bold. And yeah, every single person has incredible testimonies from this trip. We're actually on a bus. I think we're going to a worship night together. We only rode a bus maybe twice, but it was a good time to get a team photo. So yeah, we have, I'll just name some people. There's Parker, Mariana, Tara, Jessica, Nikki, Hannah Joy, Adam, Michaela, Emily, Jonathan, Ben, Peyton, Danielle, and myself. So yeah, we're pretty fun squad. There's a kind of a goofy selfie I took before we got on the plane. And there's a picture of Nikki. She I think she's the only person on the team that successfully did this, but she actually got to ride up front with one of the rickshaw drivers. And we were kind of cracking up, taking pictures of her while she rode in the front. So there's a funny picture of her right there. But yeah, evangelism. Evangelism can be a scary thing especially if you're not used to it. And if you're going to a new country, you don't know what the culture's like. But I have a really cool quote up there in the top right corner from Peyton. He's one of he's the guy I sit next to on that bus picture. But he shared this with me, and I had to, as soon as he said it, I had to write it on my phone. But I was, you know, praying and asking God for boldness, because I wanted to be bold in how I engage people in conversation and talked about Jesus, you know. And he said that, you know, boldness, you know, is an action to fight fear, but love destroys it. So, like, what he went on to say from that was, you can pray for boldness and ask for boldness and try to be bold, but if you're not loving the people you're trying to be bold enough to go speak to, then it doesn't matter. You're trying to fight fear by being bold, but if you just love them, then fear is just not even in the picture, because you're wanting to love the people. So boldness is kind of a product of that. And that really, really spoke to me. And like from there, I think it was just really easy to talk to people. And yeah, so I was talking earlier, we were trying to focus on people who are open to us, or open in three ways. The first way being open to us, so they would want to talk to us, they wanted to hang out, spend time. And what's cool about India is they run an India time, which is so different than U.S. time. They're never on a hurried schedule. They always have time for you. Even if they have a job to be at, if they're talking to you, they will spend the next couple hours just talking to you and not worry about being late. And they'll invite you to their homes and vows from India. but yeah, that's what culture's like there. So once you get someone who's open to you, you could talk to them for pretty much as long as you want. And I was amazed at how easy it was to get people, and most people were open to you. From there you wanted to see how open they were to the message. So you would find a door to share the gospel, to talk about Jesus, and the people who are actually interested in Jesus, those are people who are open to the message. A lot of people I did encounter did just want to hang out with me because I was American, so we had to kind of differentiate between those two different types of people. But like I said earlier, it is so easy to get into a gospel conversation with people because they're so spiritual. You can just like walk up to someone and say, "Hey, I'm from America. What's your family? What's your spirituality like in your family?" And just start talking about it. And it's so easy that they're not awkward, they're not offended. You can just jump in conversation that easily. So once you found people are open to the message, we want to make sure they're open to sharing, that they've received the gospel, they've given their lives to Jesus, and they see how important it is that everyone knows about it. So they have to go and share. So those are the people you're looking for, and those are the people who are going to change India from the inside out. So we want to find those people and disciple them and then leave so they can do the work themselves and we can go back to America, you know. So, yeah, talking to people, it's not awkward in the slightest. People love talking to you there. They're so welcoming and warm. Yeah, restaurants were a really great place to. I had so many encounters with people in restaurants. You could walk up to the table with people sitting there and there'd be some empty seats. And he's like, "Hey, I'm from America. Can I sit with you?" And they're like, "Sure." And then they'll offer you their food and you just start talking to them, and it's awesome. You can make friends so easy, and you can offer to pray for people. People because they're so spiritually like they have such a grip for spirituality. You can ask anyone if you can pray for them, and 9 times out of 10 they will let you. They love being blessed, even if it's by your God and not one of theirs. They want to be blessed. So a common way we would kind of propose that, we'd say, "I serve a powerful God who answers prayer. Do you or your family need prayer for anything?" Or, "I serve a powerful God who heals. Do you need healing or whatever?" And we'd pray. There's some more conversation starters for evangelism. Indians are very curious, so they will ask you questions and ask you questions and ask you questions. And a lot of questions I got asked were about Donald Trump, and I would say, "Yeah, he's our president, but let me tell you about Jesus." So yeah, those conversations usually wouldn't go good places. So we kind of like just kind of steer the wheel, you know? Yeah, head bobbing, kind of dodging. But this is really loud. Sorry. A lot of people have heard about Jesus, but they don't know the gospel. So you can ask him have you heard of Jesus? He's like, yeah, he heard he died. I heard he's a great prophet or whatever. And you can go from there. And like, you can ask them questions because they're going to ask you questions. And ask them what they know. And then you can kind of tell them what you believe. And it's so easy to see how open they are to what you're saying. And they'll have faith to believe it right there. So it was incredible. So I'll share some kind of different methods to evangelism that we used in India. This one's really cool. It's easy to remember, too. It's the 2-3-4 method. So there's two ways to share the good news. First way, it's your story. It has three parts. Before you met Jesus, how you met him, when your life has changed, and then after you met Jesus, which is now. Those are three parts. And then the second way is the story of Jesus. It has four parts. First being, God loves us and made us to have a relationship with him. Our bad deeds separated us from God. Bad deeds kind of relates to their concept of karma. So there's good deeds and bad deeds, and they're always trying to not do bad deeds because their caste system, they believe they'll be reincarnated and they'll be in a lower caste. They'll be more poor or whatever. So the bad deeds relates to them. The third part, Jesus died on the cross for our bad deeds and rose again from the dead. If you believe in him and make him Lord, you'll be saved. So that was the 2-3-4 method. Then some more methods. Power evangelism. Because their spiritual climate is so active there, we saw miracles and signs and wonders all the time. I'll share the scripture real quick. It says, Jesus said to them, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. In my name, they will cast out demons, they will pick up serpents with their hands, and if they drink any deadly poison, it will not hurt them, and they will lay hands on the sick, and they will recover. We probably saw all of those except the serpents. They happen on a regular basis, yeah. And when I say deadly poison, the water there is not filtered, it's contaminated, there's parasites. And so we drank bottled water when we were in the hotel, but you're getting invited into homes to eat their food all the time. And you can't turn it down. Like Jesus even says, like, you must eat what's offered and presented to you. So we would, if we went to a home, we would sit down and just pray and have faith that we can drink poison and be okay, and we'd eat the food and drink the water. And that would really bless the people who were serving you the food too, and it'd make it easier for you to share the love of Jesus with them. So that was kind of a practical way that part applies. But yeah, the third way, India is a story culture. They love telling stories. There's all these different stories in Hinduism about all these different gods. But we would ask them if they heard the story of Jesus, and we called that the sea to sea story, creation to Christ. Have you heard the story of Jesus? No? Okay, well, it starts a long time ago, beginning of creation. I kind of use like a combination of all three of these, kind of depending on the person. I kind of incorporate my story after I share the story of Jesus and how, you know, I kind of just played it by ear. But there's no, like, wrong way if you're just loving them and sharing the gospel. But we saw all three of those all the time. This next point. Since missionaries aren't allowed into India by the government, we didn't want people in our hotel or the airport knowing that we were missionaries, so we would speak in code, or texting people using social media. We would speak in code so that if someone were to like audit our phones, the government, they would know that we were missionaries. So here's the exhausted list of all the different codes we used. Jesus is J, Holy Spirit's HS. If we were praying, we were PRing. There's YARPing too. I like that one, but we never used it. Time with Jesus was TWJ. The Bible was the book. Evangelism is EV. Worship was dubship. We kind of made that one up by ourselves. That was one of my favorites. Christians were cousins. A mission trip was an M trip. A missionary is an M. A disciple is a D. If you're doing discipleship with someone, you're doing D-ship. The long-term team was the LTT. We were a short-term team, so we were an STT. A person of peace, someone who's open, would be a POP. A pass-off would be a PO. Testimonies were T monies. And getting baptized, I think this is my favorite. We just said they were getting dunked. So that's the code we speak in. And it was easy to forget. So we would kind of catch each other and I don't know. It was fun. We honestly felt like secret agents the whole trip. But here's kind of our schedule. There's no such thing as a normal day in India, but here's the schedule we tried to stick to. We'd wake up early in the morning, or whenever our alarms would go off. Wake up and try to spend an hour with Jesus, just talking to him, asking him what he wanted to do that day, and where he was going to lead us. And then we'd have breakfast together, have team time. We'd go around and encourage each other. We'd kind of gauge where each person on the team was at. We'd do like a thumb meter, where they're at physically, where they're at spiritually. Then we'd get them in the middle. We'd pray for them, encourage them. We'd have prayer time, and then we'd break into groups. We'd worship, dubship, and we'd break into groups for evangelism for EV. Then from noon, 4:30-ish, it was really flexible, but we'd have afternoon EV, and then we'd come back to the hotel. We'd rest for a while, then we'd have a PR meeting, go back out again for evening evangelism. So, but yeah, if you were to have schedule a time with a POP, a person of peace, to have discipleship with them, that always took precedence. If the schedule was going, you still want to meet with them first. That was the most important thing. So yeah, now we're to some testimonies. Cool. So this is a picture of us sharing testimonies in one of the hotel rooms. That's me right there. I was really animated, so I probably won't be as animated when I share it this time. But me and Parker, this is a crazy story. It might take a little bit. But so one afternoon for afternoon EV, we break into groups of two and three and four people. And each group would get this like old Nokia phone, like an old brick phone. And that would be like, I think the phone you'd use to give that number, or to get numbers from people to stay in touch with them. You couldn't give them your personal phone, even if you had an international plan, because you didn't want them like finding out you're a missionary or word getting out. So to maintain security, we'd have these old brick phones. And since we were in different groups with different people every day, you'd end up with someone else's contact because you'd have their brick phone. And so I was in a group of two or three one day, and I had the brick phone. And Parker, he's the guy in the black shirt right there. He's in a different group, but him and Peyton, I think they were trying to meet with the guy. He was already a Christian, and they were going to show him how to go and share the gospel. So they're trying to meet with him at a mall, and he was supposed to call the brick phone to get in touch with them to figure out where to meet, and I had the phone that this guy was supposed to call. And so I was doing afternoon evangelism while Parker and Peyton were going to go meet with him. And this guy would call me, and he would ask, where's Peyton? I'm trying to find Peyton. I wouldn't understand him at all. He was speaking like right into the speaker and had a really thick accent. So I couldn't understand him. I just said, hey, just wait at the mall. Peyton's on his way. And then I would hang up because I couldn't understand what he was saying. So I'd hang up, and he would call back. He would be even louder and more frustrated. And I would tell him, just wait, Peyton's coming. And I'd hang up again. Then he'd call back again. It happened maybe four times. And I felt terrible because obviously they weren't finding him. And they really wanted to. They focused all their time in the afternoon to find this guy, to do evangelism together. And they weren't able to find him. And I kind of felt responsible, even though I did the best I could trying to talk to this guy. Even though it really, really wasn't my fault, I still felt terrible. They weren't able to find this guy. And so we get back to the hotel for kind of the late afternoon prayer meeting. And Parker is super discouraged. He was not able to find this guy. And I'm discouraged too, because I feel responsible. And I see how discouraged he is, and I feel even worse. So me and Parker, we've kind of hit like rock bottom on the trip. And like, I felt so bad, I was almost on the verge of tears. I was like, I felt so bad because I was responsible for them not finding this guy, and how fruitful that could have been for them to share the gospel together. So I felt terrible, and Parker, he's always encouraged, and to see him discouraged was kind of devastating. So I had a discipleship meeting with a guy scheduled for 6 o'clock in the evening. But at the time, I didn't know that you didn't have to stick to the schedule, and that discipleship took precedence. So I was going to be late because I thought this prayer meeting was more important. So I was at the prayer meeting at 5:30, and me and Parker there were so discouraged, but the team's going to pray for us. And then I realized, oh, wow, I have a discipleship meeting at 6. I need to be going. And it was like maybe 5:50 when I realized this. And to get to the place I was going to meet him, it would take about 20 minutes. And the guy I was supposed to meet with, he only had from 6 to 6:30 to meet. So I was running low on time. When I shared with everyone, he's like, why are you still here? Go. And so I kind of felt stupid that I hadn't left yet. So that made me feel even worse. So Parker and I, we get up from the prayer meeting, we sprint out the door. Parker forgets his bag. I'm the only one who has rupees to pay for a rickshaw drive. So we're sprinting. It's like 5:55 and we leave the hotel. And we're trying to make it to a Starbucks on a kind of a urban downtown part of town to meet the guy, because that's where we planned to meet. That's where I met him the first time. And we're trying to get to the Starbucks. But we sprint out of the hotel, and we come to a rickshaw. And Parker just tells the guy, we don't have time to bargain. Just drive as fast as you can to Church Street. And so we get in the rickshaw, and I'm like sobbing at this point. I thought we were going to miss this guy. It was the second guy that we missed that day. I felt responsible for both. And Parker's really discouraged, but we're praying like madmen in this rickshaw driving to Church Street. And then we get to Church Street, and it's a one-way street. So the driver, he couldn't take us to the opposite end where the Starbucks was. So he drops us off at the opposite end, which is like 400 yards to the Starbucks. And there's like oncoming traffic coming our way. So he drops us off. We paid a ridiculous price because we didn't have time to bargain. And I'm the only one who had rupees. And I was always running low on rupees because I was trying to bless people in restaurants and trying to tip the rickshaws. And probably wasn't the best idea. But I was always running low on rupees. And so I was the only one who had any because Parker left his bag. And I paid this rickshaw driver, and at that point I only had like maybe 110 rupees, which is enough for maybe one rickshaw ride to get back to the hotel. So I was the only one who had money. So he drops us off at the other end of the street, 400 yards from the Starbucks, and there's oncoming traffic. So we had to like sprint like Jason Bourne into this oncoming traffic, like weaving in and out of cars coming straight at us, sprinting like crazy to get to the Starbucks. And so we're sprinting, and we get almost to the Starbucks. But we look to our left, and the chances of this happening is like 1 in a million, maybe, because the city is so populated. We look to our left, and we see somebody that we know from Antioch, Raleigh. Like, this is why he's like in the middle of, it's like Church Street. It's like what are you doing here? His name is Woody, and he wasn't on the short term team. He's actually one of the summer long interns, and the chances of us running into him were next to none. But we didn't have time to stop and talk. So we're sprinting to the Starbucks, and we like look and we see Woody, and we're like, sorry, we don't have time, follow up. That's all we said, and then we sprint into the Starbucks. But we were already kind of weirded out that we saw him. But we go into Starbucks, and it's this huge Starbucks. There's two stories, and we're looking for the guy. It's like 6:15. We have 15 minutes. We're hoping that he didn't leave because he might have waited. But they're running on India time, so we kind of have some flexibility. So we go in, and we look in the first floor. He's not there. We go to the second floor, look around. He's not there. And we think, maybe he's in the bathroom. So we wait a little bit to see who comes out of the men's restroom, and it's not him. And we feel awful. So we sit down at the table, and both of us just start, like, just weeping. We're so discouraged. And so I remember that this guy I'm supposed to meet with, he doesn't have a brick phone number, so he can't call me. The only way we can get in touch is through using Wi-Fi, through using like a messenger app on my phone, a personal phone. So I already have like favor with one of the baristas that works there. So I ask him to get me on their Wi-Fi, and he gets me on, and I message the guy, and he said, he replied to me. He said, sorry, Jacob, I can't make it. A friend of mine was in a crash, and I'm at the hospital. So we were discouraged and not knowing what to do, pretty much sobbing, sitting at this table. We knew the guy was at the hospital. So we're praying and just waiting on the Lord because we don't know what to do with this time now, cause since we planned on meeting the guy. Parker, he feels like he kind of like gets a word from the Lord, and it's Psalm 23. That's why we put it in the bulletin. He's kind of like sketched out at first. He's like, that's really cliche. Everyone knows that psalm. Like, why would God say that now? But he opens his Bible to Psalm 23 and reads it out loud. And that's when everything shifted right there. the presence of God just fell, and he gave us peace. And we were already like weeping, like, because we were like so discouraged. But when he read that out loud, then we started, I was like weeping, like joy, just thanking God that he was in control, and that he knew what he was doing. This psalm was like really, like, it was kind of prophetic too, because some of the things that happened throughout the rest of the day were in this psalm, which I'll get to. But so we knew that the guy was at the hospital, so we kind of had the idea, what if we went to the hospital to visit with him and maybe pray for his friend? Maybe God will heal his friend and the whole hospital will come to know Jesus. Who knows? So we asked the barista where this hospital was. We got the name from the guy, he showed us on his phone. It was an hour away, so we did not have time to get there. So we kind of gave up on meeting with the guy, but we still had in our hearts we wanted to go to a hospital. So we asked him where the nearest hospital was, and he gave us the name, and it was like maybe 15 minutes away. He's like, okay, that's doable, we can do that. But the thing is, we only have 110 rupees. That's enough for one rickshaw drive. So if we were to take a rickshaw to this hospital, we wouldn't have any rupees to get back to the hotel. We'd be stranded in the middle of the city. but we just decided, oh yeah, this is what we did. We had just seen Woody, and we thought maybe we can run into Woody again and ask him for some rupees, just to borrow some. But the chances of us running into him again are even slimmer than we ran into him the first time. So we were walking down the stairs of the Starbucks, and we just said, God, we're just declaring that Woody is going to be standing outside the Starbucks. We just declared that it would happen. And we walk down the stairs, we walk out the entrance, we look to our right, and there he is. There's Woody. He was with, I think, one other summer intern. We like sprinted up to him, and we're so overwhelmed, trying to figure out what we're going to do. And we ask him, hey, so we're trying to figure out how to get to the hospital, but we only have 110 rupees. We rushed to get here. Parker forgot his bag. Could we borrow some rupees? And he said, sorry, guys, I don't have any. I'm actually on my way to exchange my dollars for rupees. That's why I'm here. But he shared this with us. He felt like that morning, what he felt like that morning, he had heard from the Lord that he would run into someone, possibly from the Raleigh team, that they would be really, really overwhelmed, and that it would be his job to encourage them to follow the voice of the Lord by faith. And that's how specific that was. And we're like, wow. And so he was like giddy that he actually saw us and ran into us, because the chances of that happening, the Lord had kind of told him it would happen, and then it did happen. So we were kind of shocked that the Lord had told him that. So at that point, we're like, okay, God, you know what you're doing, so we're just going to trust you. So we got Woody and the other guy's name is Jonah. We got them to pray for us, and we kind of just waited to see what the Lord was saying. And Jonah felt like, he shared this with us. He's like, I don't know if this is from God. This probably isn't. I don't really feel confident with this, but I'm just getting the number 5. Don't know what that means, but I figured I'd share it with you. So we're like, okay, the number 5. We'll be looking for it and see if God does something with this. So they prayed for us. Parker kind of feels like we should go to the hospital too. And so we started walking down the street, and we just knew that we had to just follow God and see where he was leading us and see what happened. So we're walking down Church Street the opposite way that we came, and I hear this like music playing from this like hallway, and it's like American music. It's a song I'd recognized from the radio growing up, and I was like, wow, that's a song I know. And it caught my attention, and I realized, okay, maybe God's trying to get my attention right now. So I look to where it's coming from, and I see a sign, and it's got an arrow pointing into this hallway. I'm like, okay, God, do you want me to go into this hallway? So I'm like, I don't know what's down this hallway or what waits me, but I'm going to go because you know what you're doing. So I told Parker, and he's like, okay. So we walk into this really narrow hallway, and there's like a fake flower shop at the end of it. And there's just two guys standing behind the counter at this fake flower shop. And we walk up to him. We start trying to engage in conversation, start to try to share about Jesus. There was like zero English understood. They did not speak any English, did not understand. But they knew we were speaking English, and they grabbed the phone on the counter of the shop, and they called a guy that they knew who spoke English, and he was going to translate over the phone for us. And so they call the guy, and they hand me the phone. and I'm talking to him. He speaks great English, and I just really feel like God wants me to share the gospel with the guy over the phone. So I shared the gospel with him over the phone and prayed for him. And this guy was, like, blown away. It was awesome. He was like, "You are a very good Christian man. Can I have your number?" Like, it was really cool because we want to, like, see if people are open to us and open to meeting with us and getting their numbers. Usually we ask them. That was, like, the only time that someone actually asked me for my number first. He wanted to meet with me. It was really cool. So I found a person of peace over the phone after sharing the gospel with him. It was really cool. I hung up. I was like, wow, that was really cool. And Parker and I, we told those guys bye. They didn't understand us, but it was okay. And we left, and we turned out of the street, and we kept going the same direction. And we see a guy on a motorcycle, and we ask him, "How do we get to this hospital? Can you tell us how to get there?" And he says, "Yeah, you can't get there by walking. You have to take a rickshaw." So we didn't have a choice. We had to take a rickshaw to get there. And but we pray for the guy. He gets touched. It's really cool. And we get in the rickshaw, and we're trying to bargain with him. We say, "Hey, we only have 110 rupees. Can we pay 80? And it takes us a little bit, but he finally agrees to 80. And we drive to the hospital. We get out, and I'm reaching in my pocket to pay him to give him the 80. And Parker says, "Hey, I feel like God's saying, give him the 110. So I was like, okay. So I gave him all the money we had. And then that's when the door for the gospel opened. And Parker said, "Jesus gave his all for you." I was like, wow, good job, Parker. And Parker shared the gospel with him. He'd heard about Jesus but didn't know the gospel. So Parker shared with him. And then I felt like, I just like feeling in my heart, like I felt like it was the Holy Spirit telling me that something's going on with his parents and you should ask him. So I just went for it. I said, "Hey, God just told me there's something going on with your parents." And his eyes get huge. And he said, yeah, my parents are both sick. My father, he just lost his leg. They're in really bad shape. And so we asked him, it's like, "God told me that. Like, he loves your parents. Can we pray for you? Pray for your family." And so we prayed that God would heal his parents. We believed that God would grow his father's leg out again. I don't know, we were just believing for some crazy stuff in India. But we prayed for the guy, and he gave his life to Jesus right there on the spot. It was amazing. Yeah. And he was just our driver to get to the hospital. He wasn't. We hadn't got to the hospital yet, and we've already had two encounters like that. He gave his life to Jesus. So we had 0 rupees. We get out of the rickshaw. We walk in the entrance of the hospital, but we're like, "Okay, God, you're doing some cool stuff." So we're going to keep going by faith. We believe that you'll provide the rupees to get us home. So we walk into this hospital and we sit down and we look, and there's like the counter where they take visitors. And there's just like 2 TV screens, and on the TV screens they have like patient names and like patient ID numbers. And they look at one of the numbers, and the first 3 like digits of the number are 555. And Parker and I are both like, "Yeah, let's see if we can go visit this lady." We have no idea who she is, but like it matches her name next to it. So we go to the counter, and we ask him, say, "Hey, can we visit with, I think her name was Jemiah M or something like that?" And they're like, "Sure." They're like really kind and welcoming, like India normally is, but they're really weirded out that these 2 random white American guys walk into a hospital and ask to see some Indian lady. So they're going to make sure that we're legit. So they ask us, "How do you know Jemiah?" And Parker goes, "Oh, we're good friends." they're like, "Okay." And we're talking to him, and like we get like the room number. We're ready to go visit Jemiah and pray for her, and maybe she'll get radically healed. We don't know what'll happen, but these people behind the counter are really, really sketched out by us. And so they ask us, "How old is Jemiah?" And I just blurted out, 23. And they're like, "Nope, she's 74. So we're like, "Darn it." So they wouldn't let us go see her. So, but we knew that God had brought us there. We saw the number. We knew it wasn't coincidence. Parker was kind of feeling discouraged. He's like, "Hey, I feel like I just lied to them when I told them that we were good friends." And I was like, "Hey, don't forget about Rahab when she told the people. You know, she kind of lied, but God used her." So he was like, "Yeah, you're right." So we walk out of the hospital, and we kind of just stand in front of the entrance, and we just pray for Jemiah. We just prayed that she'd feel 23 again. She'd be healed, you know. easy. And so we got to the hospital. We couldn't really do much else there. So we just prayed, asked God, what do you want us to do now? And I feel like we should walk down the street to the right. So I'm like, Parker, I feel like we should go down the street. So we're going down the street, and we pass this like big open like barred gate, and it's like high security. It's in the nicer part of the city. There's like one or two security guards standing in front of it, and it's really intimidating. But I'm like, okay, maybe God, is God gonna make us go in there? So we walk by the gate, like we pretty much passed it at this point. And Parker goes, Jacob, I feel like we should go in there. And so I'm like, oh man. So I look, but this is when I was like, okay, yeah, you're right. I look to the right of the gate, and there's a sign that says Gate 5. And I was like, okay, yeah, we definitely need to go in there. So we go into this like dark alleyway. It's nighttime at this point. It's like maybe 7 or 8. We go into this dark alleyway, and there's just like all these cars parked and people getting out of their cars. They're dressed really nice, and they're walking into this building. It's like a big like auditorium style building, up these stairs into this building, and all these people are walking in, and we hear some guy on a microphone, his voice coming from out of the building. And we're like, what is going on in there? God, surely you're not telling us to go in there. But we were kind of intimidated because maybe that might be like, it might be some like Hindu ceremony or something. And we're like, I don't know if we should go in there. But I look past the building and I see a guy sitting in a chair just by himself, kind of with his head down, just kind of chilling by himself. And God immediately like highlighted this guy to me, like go speak to him. And so Parker and I, we walked up to him and started talking to him. He recognized the name Jesus, but didn't know about who he was or the gospel, or didn't really speak any English either. We were only able to communicate the name Jesus. And then we had to like motion, like, we want to pray for you in the name of Jesus. And he, after a few tries, he understood. But before we prayed, Parker and I took a step back, and we're like, okay, what do we do right now? Like, he doesn't understand us. Like, we feel like God highlighted this guy to go talk to him. What do we do? And I remembered, we never see this in America. This is crazy. But I remembered on the day of Pentecost when the Holy Spirit fell, and people were speaking in different tongues, you know, and people were understanding it in their own language, even though they weren't actually speaking it. So I was like, what if, I think God maybe wants me to, I don't know, get a tongue for this guy. So I was like, this is really crazy, but I'm going to go for it. So Parker puts his hand on me, prays for me. We go to this guy, and I just let whatever syllables sounded right come out, and it sounded like gibberish to me. It didn't make sense. I didn't know what I was saying. But in my mind, I was praying for this guy in some other language. It was crazy. It was really weird. But, it was really weird. Every now and then, I'd stop, and I'd pray in English, what I felt like God was kind of highlighting. And I got, like, a picture of this man and Jesus in a field, and they're just, like, freely just, like, running through a field together, and it was just pure bliss, and it was amazing. So I prayed into that, and then I started praying into this tongue again. It was wild. And I just kept getting like freedom. Like I just kept praying freedom for this guy. Now I finish, and I look at the guy, and he has tears beating in his eyes. He'd understood what I said. It was incredible. He understood what I said, and we asked him, like, do you feel anything in your heart? And he said, he said this in perfect English, put his hands to his heart, and he said, I feel free. And he didn't understand any English, but he understood what I was saying. Like, God was speaking to him. It was incredible. He said, I feel free. And he had tears in his eyes. It was incredible. He understood every word. And then after that, Parker led him through a prayer to receive Jesus in English, and he understood and repeated after him. He understood every word. It was amazing. He repeated after him in English and received Jesus right there. So, yeah, that was the kind of the third major encounter we had. It was crazy. So that happened, and we kind of got his number. We kind of agreed to come back later and give him a Bible in his language, but never found him. But I gave his contact to the long-term team. So hopefully they met with him and gave him a Bible. But we walked back to like the sidewalk, and we're standing in front of that same building where we heard the voice coming out, and. But I'm just, like, sobbing tears of joy at this point. I'm like, God, that's real. You just did that. Like, wow. And so we just, Parker and I, we just started worshiping God right there in the sidewalk because we didn't know what else to do. We just started singing Jesus Paid It All, just kind of spontaneously on the side of the street. And then we start praying, like, God, what do we do now? We still have time. We have time, but what do we do now? And Parker feels like God tells him, do whatever Jacob says to do. So he says that, and I'm like, I feel like we should go in. And so we're walking up the stairs into this entrance, and like with every step we take, we're like, what are we doing? It was just really weird. And we walk into the entrance, but Indian culture, they're so welcoming that they're not afraid of strangers. So as soon as we walk in, there's people at this like table offering us like desserts and smoothies and like, come eat. So we're taking this dessert, can't really deny it, and it was actually really good. But I look down the hallway into the auditorium, and I see like a girl on the stage in a white gown, and I was like, did we just walk into someone's wedding? And they don't even know us, but I keep kind of listening, and I hear the guy on the microphone talk about sacraments. And I was like, oh, wait, this might be like a Catholic thing. And there's two girls on the stage, actually. They're both in white gowns, and apparently they're getting confirmed. It's kind of like a Catholic kind of ceremony. When the girls reach a certain age, they get confirmed and like blessed by the congregation. But we're standing in the back. It's crazy that we actually ran into a Catholic church, because, like I said, there's only 2% in India is any kind of professing Christian, Catholic or whatever, you know. But we're standing in the back, sipping on this smoothie, eating this dessert, and we're like, okay, what do we do now? We walked into this building. People are welcoming us, but I still don't know what we're doing here. And then we feel like God is saying, go to the guy in the microphone and ask him if you can speak. And we're like, okay. We've seen him do crazy stuff already, so we're like, okay. And so we finish up our dessert. We walk up to the guy, and they're Catholics, and they, you know, we believe that they love Jesus. So we just tell him, it's like, hey, we just been following God today, like where he's been leading us, and he just led us into your church. We're wondering if we could just bless these girls and kind of just over the microphone just share a little bit. And the guy was kind of weirded out, but because there's two random white Americans walking to his church and asked to speak on the microphone, didn't even know the girls who were getting confirmed. But he's like, he was cool with it. He was actually like really psyched that these two white like missionary dudes from America wanted to share at his church. So he was like, yeah, I'm cool with it, but you got to talk to the family first. But as soon as we say that, we look up to the stage, and the dad is like looking at us eagerly. He's saying, come up stage, come. So we go up on the